So good morning, today is December 7th, 2015, and we are here in our call hall with Mr. Ross Colbert, who is going to tell us about his life and his career. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's start at the very beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I'm from Thunder Bay, Ontario, which used to be the twin cities of Fort William and Port Arthur. And when I was born there in 1934, and when I left at the end of grade 13, the two communities still existed, Fort William and Port Arthur. They were divided by a river, but they were communities of about maybe 40 or 50,000 people each. And at the top of Lake Superior, about halfway between Sault Ste. Marie and Winnipeg, I suppose, Thunder Bay was created when the two cities were joined in the, I don't know when it was, probably in the mid-50s to 60s. I left there in 1954 to come up to UBC. And so I wasn't there at the time that Fort William and Port Arthur were united into Thunder Bay. There was no university in either Fort William or Port Arthur. There is now, of course, Lakehead University, which is situated between the two, where the two cities were. It's in the heart of the city. And it has a law school, which is housed in the former Port Arthur Collegiate Institute. And the high school that I went to, the Fort William Collegiate Institute, has not been converted into anything as useful as a law school. It has been it's been converted into condominiums, apparently, which I find hard to believe, since it was a large building with Doric columns and granite floors, and how they converted it into condominiums would be an interesting phenomenon to examine, I guess. Anyway, that's where I'm from, Thunder Bay, Ontario, and I had to leave the city at the end of high school because there was no university at the Lakehead.
So you came to UBC in 1957.
Came to UBC in 1954. Uh-huh. And entered second year of arts and graduated from arts with majors in English and history in 1957. And started law school here in the old Curtis building in the fall of 1957, and graduated with the class of 1960.
So can you tell us about your impression of UBC back in those days when you arrived?
Well, UBC was a fairly manageable size in the sense that I think the total student population was somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 at the most. I didn't have a car, and so I bought my first umbrella when I started at UBC because I had no experience with winter rain, and that was a phenomenon that it took a few weeks to get used to, but in any event, the campus was fairly easy to get around. A lot of my classes in my arts years were in the so-called temporary buildings, the old shacks down on West Mall. Other than some of the older buildings, like the old forestry building and where we had our geography classes, I think. Anyway, it was the campus was fairly small. Dr. McKenzie was the president, and Dr. Norman McKenzie, and Dean Curtis was running the law school when I began in 19 57. We had, I think, two sections in our first year class, probably of about 50 or 60 students per section. I can't remember exactly, but interesting thing about law school in those days, there were no optional courses. In either first year or second year, there were no optional courses. In third year, the only option that we had, that we were offered, was a choice between municipal law and shipping. And for some reason that I can't fathom at this point, the students that I had a close relationship with, we all chose shipping when indeed we should have been, I think municipal law should have been a mandatory course. Anyway, we had our reasons for making that choice, and my friends at the time were three other students with whom I studied every Sunday morning. Ed Mortimer, who has become perhaps one of the leading family law lawyers in British Columbia. Leo Amigetti, who became one of the province's leading experts in trusts and in dependence relief, and earned his master's degree here at UBC, and his thesis was a book on dependence relief in British Columbia, which he authored under the supervision of Professor Bertie McLean, who was later to become dean of the law school. And the fourth member of our study group was Ross Lander, who practiced law in Kelowna and then was appointed to the county court and then to the Supreme Court over in Vancouver Island upon merger of the county and Supreme Courts in 1990. So those were my three good friends all the way through law school, and we've remained in close contact ever since. And they've been my best friends, I suppose, in my adult years. Wonderful friends from law school.
So can you tell us, why did you choose to do law? Why did you decide to go to law school?
I think that I chose law because it was almost by default. I had given some thought to a career in journalism, but for some reason, as I finished my arts degree in English and history, I was dissuaded from that course, and I don't quite remember why, but in talking to a relative who was a lawyer, he suggested that, well, if I was uncertain about what I might want to study next, I should consider law school, and it was that simple. And it was certainly a decision that I've never regretted, because I've had a very rewarding and fulfilling career as a lawyer.
So do you remember a little bit more about your law school curriculum? You mentioned two courses. Do you remember more about that?
Oh, I remember some of my favorite professors. I remember Dr. Malcolm McIntyre, who was our first year torts professor, and one of the most engaging and interesting teachers that I've ever encountered, I think, Dr. Malcolm McIntyre was. And he was able to write on torts was our text, but Dr. McIntyre, I think his PhD, I think his doctorate in law was from Harvard, or Harvard or Yale, I'm not sure which, doesn't matter. He taught on the basis of not just the casebook right on torts, but he had practiced law in the Maritimes, I think in Nova Scotia, perhaps in Halifax, I believe it was Halifax. It's so long ago that I would have to ask his son, Jim McIntyre, who has retired from the law faculty, having spent many years teaching here himself. But I think Dr. McIntyre practiced in Halifax. In any event, he was able to relate concepts of torts to some of his experiences in practice and some of the litigation that he was involved in, And it was, I thought, the most exciting lecturing that I experienced while here. Others, Professor Bourne used a different approach. He was our international law prof, equally effective, but just a different approach. The teaching styles were varied. We had a fair number of downtown practitioners who lectured us. I remember Mr. Justice Victor Dreyer, who lectured us on evidence, a wonderful teacher. Others from the profession, Bert Schmidt, who lectured us on, he died last year, he lectured us on insurance law, Dennis Tuck on shipping. So there were a fair number of downtown lecturers. Hugh McGivern, who lectured us on homicide during our first year criminal law course, along with the county court judge, Stanley Remnant, who was the principal lecturer in criminal law. So there was a mix of academic and downtown practitioners who lectured us in all 3 years. And it was an interesting variety of approaches, I think, to teaching law. I wasn't a particularly adept student. I didn't have very good study habits, but I enjoyed my association with the other three fellows in my study group, and they kind of dragged me through law school, I think.
So was it a difficult time, law school? Was it a challenging experience, or was it in...
I found the analysis at exam time very difficult. I like to write, but I don't have very good analytical skills, and so I didn't find the exam process anything but challenging. And so I wasn't a particularly adept student, but I enjoyed myself here. I worked in the library for Diana Priestley all 3 years I was in law school, and I enjoyed my association with her. She was the librarian here at UBC for a long time, and I think ended up at the University of Victoria as the librarian there. She was a lovely person and a very good librarian, a great help to students. So yes, it was challenging, but enjoyable 3 years.
Great. So what happened after you graduated?
Well, I had married a Vancouver a nursing student, and we decided that we would like to live other than in Vancouver. And so I applied to and was accepted as an article student at a law firm in Penticton, in the Okanagan Valley, Boylan Company. I articled there in 1960 to 61, and then practiced in another well-established law firm in Penticton, Washington and Callahan. The senior partner, Day Washington, was later a county court judge in the Okanagan Valley, and his partner, Howard Callahan, was appointed to the Supreme Court of British Columbia in 1978 and retired from the Supreme Court of British Columbia the same time I did, in 2001. And he still lives here on the university, in the university area and the endowment lands. And so I practiced there until only for 6 years. Then I was appointed the first full-time family court judge in the Okanagan Valley in 1967. I was just 32 years of age and had been practicing for 6 years in Penticton. And my family court circuit involved the cities of Penticton, Kelowna, and Vernon. I would travel to Kelowna every Wednesday and Vernon every Thursday, and I also was responsible for most of the criminal trials in Penticton. And I carried on with that family court circuit and the criminal cases in Penticton until I moved to Vancouver in 1979. I transferred to the Provincial Court of British Columbia at 222 Main Street, which is the main criminal court here in Vancouver. And I was there for 10 years and then was appointed to the county court in 1989. And with the merger of the county and Supreme Courts in 1990, I became a member of the Supreme Court of British Columbia with my chambers at 800 Smythe Street. And I retired from that court in June of 2001. For the next 10 years, I did pro bono parenting mediation under the auspices of the Boys and Girls Clubs of South Coast BC. I used their boardroom at one of their facilities on Victoria Drive, and I provided free parenting mediation for about 10 years, I stopped that about 3 years ago, but we'll probably get back to it early next year. I've just lost my wife, and I would like to do something constructive with the time that's on my hands, and so I think we'll be doing some parenting mediation through Access Pro Bono BC at their location, which is in the Law Society building down on Canby Street in downtown Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I plan to do in the new year.
Great. So what would you say is the highlight of your long career? What do you consider to be the highlight?
Oh, I don't know what I would consider to be the highlight. I think what I probably found the most challenging, if not the most enjoyable, were the jury trials that I presided over in the Supreme Court. Maybe 70 or 80 jury trials in the 10 years or 12 years I was in that court. I also enjoyed the people that I worked with in the provincial court at 222 Main Street. There were about 18 provincial court judges at that location. They were interesting people. And I was there for 10 years, but had some extrajudicial assignments during that period of time. I was the registrar of the Supreme Court for a year and a half back in 82, 83, and also ran the Western Judicial Education Center for a couple of years with an office here in the law school in the mid 80s, I guess that was, for a couple of years. But the highlights probably were those two experiences, the jury trials when I was in the Supreme Court, which I found really interesting, trying to communicate with people from the community who had no experience with adjudication, obviously, the challenge of instructing them properly was interesting. That was probably the highlight, I think,
mm-hmm.
that 10 or 12 year period.
So can you tell us about the changes in the profession you have noticed throughout your career?
I think probably the most notable change is the extent to which specialization has necessarily become an important component or characteristic of the profession. The law in its complexities continues to develop, and it's hardly surprising that as the law becomes more complex, there are tendencies towards specialization that really are quite remarkable, I think. There are areas of the law that lawyers who become judges have had no experience with, and it's a tremendous challenge to lawyers who are appointed to the Supreme Court of British Columbia or to the Court of Appeal when they are suddenly immersed in areas of the law for which they had no experience in practice. I experienced that to some extent when I was appointed to the Supreme Court, because my principal areas of practice had been general litigation particularly family, personal injury, and criminal law. So I didn't have any experience with tax law or intricate commercial transactions or banking law, and so those kinds of cases were always an interesting challenge. And but I think specialization is the most notable development in the law since I graduated from this law school 55 years ago, because back then the expectation that you would be a general practitioner, particularly if you were going to be living in a smaller community, was general. And even in Vancouver, some of the well-established firms like Russell and Dumoulin, they were general litigation firms, and now there are specialized litigation firms all over the province, and also firms, Thorstensons and perhaps one or two others, that specialize in taxation work. And so that's a very significant development, certainly since I was called at the bar back in 1961. The issue of specialization is very important.
So have you ever considered an academic career in law?
No.
No? Why is that?
Because I think my experience with my 12 law clerks when I was in the Supreme Court of British Columbia is that they're all a lot smarter than I was, and quite frankly, I don't have enough confidence in my analytical skills or my academic skills to be a teacher. I must say that I enjoyed working with my law clerks in the Supreme Court as much as anything that happened in those 12 years. They were wonderful young people who kept me grounded. They were interested in what I was doing. I was interested in their take on what I was doing. They were a great help to me, and in particular, they were great editors, because I learned very quickly that it was foolish to sign anything that a law clerk had not read, because another set of eyes and another person's take on issues was a great assist. Now, there were judges I worked with who didn't necessarily feel that way about working closely with their law clerks, but I just was delighted to have these young people reading what I'd written and helping me with analysis when I got bogged down on an issue, and if I was trying to sort out some conflicting decisions from the Supreme Court of Canada or decisions I thought were in conflict. They were always a great help to me.
Can you describe for us any notable colleagues you have had?
Oh, I've had some remarkable colleagues, really. I think some of the people that I've worked with over the years were exceptional lawyers. I found my association with Chief Justice McEachern to be very stimulating. He was my supervisor when I was district registrar at the Supreme Court for a year and a half, 1982 to 1983 or mid-1984. He was an amazingly energetic and interesting person. There wasn't anything that was going on in that courthouse that he didn't seem to know about. And he later, of course, became chancellor of this university and was a very good chancellor. Another person who I worked closely with for a period of time was Thomas Berger. He was then Mr. Justice Tom Berger of the Supreme Court. He was chair of the Family and Children's Law Commission from 1973 to 1976, and I worked with him on that commission. At the same time, he was he ran the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline Commission, and he's an amazingly energetic and productive person, a prolific writer. I couldn't believe how much work he could take on and accomplish with such ease. One of the most gifted lawyers I think I've ever been associated with was Thomas Berger. Those are the two who I remember, I think, most vividly. I played golf for years with Henry Hutchin from the Court of Appeal, who was a lovely man and a very gifted writer. He was involved for many years in the Canadian Institute for the Administration of Justice judgment writing course that he helped organize back in the 70s, probably 70s or 80s. And he was a very quiet but interesting member of the Court of Appeal who wrote very brief reasons, believed in clear, concise, cohesive reasons. Conciseness was sort of his watchword. He never once, in all of the years he was a judge, and he was a judge for many years, gave oral reasons. He always went back to his chambers and would write some brief reasons, and he was a great teacher of judicial writing. He believed that we could all write more clearly and concisely. And so he was a mentor who I greatly respected and valued as a mentor, and he was also a good person to play golf with because he had a very competitive nature. But he and Judge Howard Callahan, one a conservative, the other a liberal, played golf together for many years, and I was privileged to be with them most Saturday mornings and would listen to their arguments as they should have been concentrating on golf, but they were arguing over points of law that I would just listen with raptly as they debated certain things. And anyway, there's another character who I was privileged to work with, Henry Hutchin, who was in the Court of Appeal when he retired.
Would you recommend for us to interview them as well?
Well, unfortunately, none of them are available anymore. Mr. Justice Callahan has a serious illness and has difficulty speaking, and Henry Hutchin passed away a couple of years ago. And Chief Justice McEachern, of course, passed away after he'd retired from the court. He went back to his old law firm. Tom Berger, if you haven't interviewed Tom Berger, you've made a big mistake because he's one of the most notable graduates of this law school. And he graduated from the UBC Law School in 1956. and he still practices law. He still does serious constitutional law cases. He was in the Supreme Court from 1972 to, I think he retired from the court about 1982 or 83. He was maybe a member of the court for about 10 years, and he's been back in practice doing mainly constitutional cases ever since. And he's a very interesting person. And I highly recommend that you interview him if you haven't already.
Absolutely. So you're back at UBC since 2011 as UBC Korean Library Narrator.
No, I narrate texts for the visually impaired, and I'm one of a group of, I don't know how many volunteers they have, but I do that every Monday morning, and at the moment I'm narrating a text on racism, which I'm finding very interesting, a collection of essays dealing with racism. The Crane Library is an interesting place. I think they narrate something in the neighborhood of between 25 and 35 or 40 books a year. For example, I it took me several months to narrate a book called Modernity, the History of Sociology in Canada, 600 odd pages. And so, you know, in the 2 hours that are available for narrating every Monday morning, which is about the maximum you can do, because after 2 hours you're pretty well tired out, it's not possible to narrate more than 20 to 25 pages in 2 hours, and so it takes a while to, the book on racism that I'm narrating now is about 400 pages long, I guess, so I'm about halfway through it, and I'll likely finish it in January or February.
So is this the only project you have been involved with UBC since you left, or?
Yes, other than, it is the only project, other than organizing our reunion, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, we the class of 1960 had its reunion, and we were able to, I think we were able to contact about 44 graduates. We lost a few who passed away, and we had 37 of them and their spouses out to dinner at the Sage Bistro. It was a very nice evening and good to touch base. It's the only major reunion we've had. I think we had a 25-year reunion downtown, which was fairly informal. So, I think other law classes have done a better job of meeting regularly than we certainly have, but our 50-year reunion was a very nice event.
Can you recommend any students, former students, that we might reach out?
Oh, former students.
Maybe somebody from the reunion.
My fellow students?
Yes.
Ed Mortimer, QC, okay. Family lawyer, whose practice is downtown. Now, Leo Amaghetti, who his old law firm is now Fasken Martineau Dumoulin, the successor to Russell and Dumoulin. He taught trusts here at UBC for years while he was practicing downtown, and he would be an interesting person to interview. Those two. Beyond that, I don't know who I would recommend from my class. I don't think that I would be doing them a favor by suggesting them, because they might not appreciate my doing that, but certainly those two good friends, would be worth interviewing, I think, if you could persuade them to participate. I think Amagedi might be a little reluctant. He's a hard fellow to pin down sometimes because he's a very private person.
Great. So my last big question for today, after a lifelong career in law, do you have any advice for potential students who would like to study law today?
It would be, I think, presumptuous of me to try and give somebody in their an undergraduate advice as to the study of law, other than that I have never regretted either my time at this law school or my time in practice. I feel very fortunate that I was able to come to this law school when I did and to begin practice when I did, because there was no shortage of work for lawyers when I graduated in 1960. And I realize that there are greater challenges today than there were then in terms of finding a rewarding career or finding a place where one can practice law. But I wouldn't hesitate to recommend the practice of law to any undergraduate. And I think particularly if there's an area of public service or law that an undergraduate has a particular interest in, the ability to specialize these days in an area of practice that would be fulfilling is so obvious that that's a pretty bland kind of recommendation for the law school, but there it is.
Mm-hmm. So what are you planning on doing next?
I'm planning on returning to parenting mediation in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
I've just sold my house and moved into an apartment and made an adjustment since I lost my wife, and she was sick she died at home, and it was a very tough year, and so I'm trying to bounce back from that, and I think that I'd like to return to parenting mediation, because when I was in the Supreme Court, I realized that there's a need to try and encourage people to negotiate resolution of family breakdown rather than to litigate. And so I found the mediation of parenting disputes to be a very rewarding experience. And I can't say that I succeeded in every case in helping people negotiate a resolution of their differences, but certainly it forces people to sit down together and to try and work out a solution to the problems that their children face, in particular when parents separate. And so that's something that I'm going to return to in the new year.
Fantastic. Well, on that note, thank you much for
your
time. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.